So tonight, I want to talk about over-effort specifically. Just for clarity's sake, I always talk Buddha Dhamma. Sometimes, because I've been doing this for 20 years, pretty much, it's kind of nice to find different ways of trying to put it across, as much for my own benefit as anybody else's. So I just wanted to assure everyone that I always talk Buddha Dhamma, although sometimes in slightly abstract ways. Tonight, for instance, will be exclusively about the four right efforts. The four right efforts being the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen, the effort to prevent unwholesome states from arising in the future, the effort to develop wholesome states that have not yet arisen, and the effort to promote wholesome states that have arisen. Yeah. So everything we'll be talking about, I'll be talking about, will be around those four right efforts. The reason for the talk was a comment that I made in a recent live stream where I might have said the wrong thing, in that I said something along the lines of, it was of concern to me that there were good meditators that tried too hard, and as a consequence of trying too hard, might miss out on the fruits of this training. Not because they weren't trying, but precisely because they were trying too hard. And I realized, for people who try too hard, the last thing you want to tell them is there's a fear of them missing out on something because they'll try too hard to make up the difference. So, oopsie. So let's see if we can put this across another way. The whole thing of over-effort put me in mind of the story in the Pali Canon of the monk Sona, who the Buddha would eventually bequeath the title of foremost in putting forth energy. The reason for this was that Sona tried really, really hard, and I mean really, 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 really hard. To the point where that if he was practicing walking meditation, his feet would start bleeding and he'd leave a bloody track. Sorry, that's not me swearing. I mean literally a bloody track behind him when he was practicing walking meditation. And it got him nowhere, despite putting forth that Herculean effort. It brought him no results. And he became despondent. You can understand it. Frustrated, disappointed, and self-pity took over, and he resolved to leave the order and return to lay life because clearly it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't for him, even though he'd put in such Herculean effort. The Buddha, being the peerless teacher that he was, understood this reasoning in Sona's mind and went to him and talked to him. And the Buddha pointed out or reminded Sona that he used to be a musician, played the lute, stringed instrument. And the Buddha asked Sona, well, if the strings are too lax, will you get the sound out of the lute? And so I said, no. If you tighten the strings too taut, will you be able to get a tune out? No, because the strings will break, said Sona. Okay then, said the Buddha. There's a middle way. Neither too slack nor too taut. If the strings are tightened in that middle way, will you be able to get a sound out of the lute? And Sona said, yes, of course I will. So the point the Buddha was making to Sona was that the very effort to try so hard was actually getting in the way of something which, if he eased off, if he relaxed, if he let go, all those results of his practice would be able to accrue. He was, in effect, getting in the way. And that's the thing about over-effort, that the person who practices over-effort doesn't understand, is that you're just getting in the way. You don't have to try so hard. So, there, that was a quick talk. 5 minutes, we're done. All right, I'll elaborate a little bit more then. So we want to find the middle way of energy. We don't want to be so lax, so slack. I don't know if this is right to say this, but I've kind of divided people off into slackers and tryhards. That doesn't sound terribly polite, but it's the only way I can think. Well, you see, the slacker, who is the slacker? The slacker is somebody who doesn't set the practice up properly, who doesn't think it's important, who doesn't reflect on their experience. They want results. They might be very strong in faith, say. They got faith in the Buddha and the teaching, and they're quite sure enlightenment will happen one day. They just got to sit in the chair often enough. But there's no real investment. There's no real relationship developed with meditation. It's just going to happen. And so they tend to be people who drift meditatively. And 15 years or so will go past, and then they'll be upset with the teacher and they'll ask why they've made no progress in 15 years of practicing every day. And the teacher will say, well, it's not how much you practice, it's what you put into the practice. So that's somebody who is like the strings of the lute, all floppy and just nothing happening. You can't get a tune out of it. And then you have the person who I admire genuinely, because there is something noble about that strong urge, that strong desire to do the job properly, to make sure it gets done. And if I exert sufficient effort and pour in enough energy, those results will come. And this is understandable, because this is the society we've been brought up in. We've been told since childhood that it's work hard and you'll get the rewards. And because the culture has been conditioned in that way, that's the way culture works. So if you work hard, you will get the material rewards. It's just when we come to meditation, it doesn't work. It's too heavy-handed. It's too extreme. The balance is in the middle. The result of trying too hard are headaches, tension, frustration, and that leads obviously to annoyance, self-pity. And this is far away from ideas of resting content in the moment. If you suggest to the try-hard that they're trying too hard and that they should stop trying too hard, they'll really try hard to stop trying hard. And that's what we've got to get at. It's that meta level of application. It's one step above just the application. There is this, as it were, this first assumption that one should always try hard, even if it is to try hard not to try hard. And so it just replicates itself over again and again and again. So what's the way out? Well, funnily enough, what I discovered when I thought about it was, for the slacker and the try hard, setting up the practice for both is equally important. So it's true for all of us. We have to set the practice up. We have to think it through carefully, and then we have to be willing to reflect on our experience and be willing to adapt our approach. And that's one of the most challenging things, because we are conditioned to act in certain ways. And so it is about learning to recondition ourselves. In the case of Sona, he listened to what the Buddha had to say, and he had enough wherewithal to adapt his approach. And that led to great results for him. And that's what we have to be willing to do. We have to be willing to ask the teacher, reflect on our experience, to learn how to recognize that having a headache in meditation, when you hadn't had a headache when you started, is trying to tell you something. And it isn't telling you that you're doing really well. It's telling you that you're misapplying yourself. And you have to learn what it's actually trying to tell you. How do we set up the practice? I think before we get on to the components of the practice itself, we have to teach ourselves a happy story with regard to meditation. You know, this is something I've been talking about a lot recently because it's so helpful. Tell yourself a happy story about meditation. Oh, I can't wait to meditate this evening. Really going to look forward to it. Oh, I'm really going to enjoy it. I'm really looking forward to it. It's so valuable. It's the most important part of my day. Oh, I love just being able to rest in the moment. I love that sense of letting go of all these other concerns. Just resting in the moment is such a beautiful thing. Just being for a change, rather than having to do. So it's changing the narrative so that it doesn't appear to be grim duty. It doesn't appear to be, I've got this trial tonight where I'm going to be on trial. I'll just be sitting alone in a room by myself and I'll be on trial and I have to get it right. Otherwise, don't tell yourself that story. Learn a new story, a story that brings you happiness. Approach meditation with happiness. Meditation is a wonderful thing to do. It teaches you how life works just through sitting in a chair with your eyes closed. Astonishing. So bringing a sense of happiness to the meditation, even before you've sat down. And there are three qualities that are really useful to remember about meditation. Purpose, direction, and focus. This is an analogy I've used before. Doesn't matter. You're going to the supermarket in your car. You have purpose. You know what your purpose is. Your purpose isn't to drift over here and drift over there. It isn't to I wonder what's down that road, or wonder. You have a purpose, which is to go and get your baked beans and your whatever else from the supermarket. Again, you're finding out more about me than you need to. So you have your purpose and you have your direction. You know where the store is. You get in your car and you go to the store in order to make your purchases. And you focus. You're focused on that. Now, it might be very tempting to think, I could go and sit in the park, or, I wonder where that road leads, or whatever else it might be. But you remember your purpose. You've got your direction. And you've got your focus, which is to say, no, one pointed, I've got to get to the shop. I'm exaggerating, I'm making much of a very small analogy, I know, but nonetheless. So when we approach meditation, it's really, really helpful, before you meditate, to get in touch with the purpose. What's the purpose of meditation? Okay, well, now we've got the overarching purpose of, well, I want to come be free of suffering. All right, well, how does one come to be free of suffering? Well, suffering is caused through craving, which is caused through ignoring the way life really is. Okay, so what's meditation? Meditation is learning not to ignore the way life is. So how do you do that? You rest content in the moment and investigate what then arises. And then you come to see, you note what type of thing it is, and then you begin to detect that these things are all transient. Oh, right, okay, so that's what I'm going to do in the meditation. That's my purpose, to rest content in the moment and allowing experience and the objects of experience to arise and note them, investigate them, explore them. So rest content in the moment. 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 I'm allowed to rest content in the moment. The instruction is saying it's perfectly okay to rest content in the moment. I estimate for a Vipassana meditator, the resting content in the moment, the just being bit, 80, 90%. The doing bit of exploring and investigating is 20 or 10% added on subsequent to the arising of contentment. So the most important thing is to be content in the moment, which means you're not driving, you're not forcing, you're not trying to get it to work. You're learning to just be, to rest, to be happy in the moment, awake, alert, happy. And so that's your direction. The direction is being, resting content in the moment, and I'm resting content in the moment. Oh, that was a sound. Oh, that was physical sensation. Oh, that was a memory that popped in my mind. So it's resting, waiting happily, getting in touch with the breath or just scanning the body, just enjoying being in the moment, enjoying being present. So you've got purpose, you've got direction, and the focus is, you know what your focus is by what it isn't. And the focus is resting content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away. That's the focus, that's what you focus on. So what is the focus not? The focus is not the worry thoughts, the daydream thoughts, the think about anything else you can except do what you sat down to do thoughts. But you have to include them. You have to allow them. So the focus is resting content in the moment, observing how things arise and pass away due to conditions by noting them. And then observing how it is that the mind is not content with that, but then wants to go off and do something else. As I was saying before, it's like your energy flows out. It's like, we call it an arsaway. It flows out into these other things. Now, the thing about right energy is that you are very allowing and accepting of the fact that that happens. And I think one of the key things that happens is that the overachiever, the try-hard, sees this as an error, as something that's preventing success at the meditation. So there's a lot of self-criticism, and there is not just the slamming down on that particular hindrance. There is then an overcompensation, which says, oh, it's gone wrong, so now I have to start again, or now I have to try harder, I have to get it right this time. And so there's this overcompensation, there's this new volition that's going in, which is not required, and that's where we're getting in the way of the process. So we start fighting with the meditation. Oh, is this right? This doesn't seem right. Oh, should I be have more of this, have more of that? Doubt enters the equation. It's more of taking over, trying to get it right, trying to make it happen. Now, in a recent live stream, I always also used the analogy of the mind being like a factory. And it's like when you meditate and you are a tryhard, it's like you are the world's worst boss. Volition is the willing, which is saying, putting in a new order to the factory, saying, I want you to produce this. And so all the other parts of the mind are like the factory workers saying, all right, boss, we'll get onto that, we'll create that. And before they have a chance to get going, the boss is going, I want you to do this, and puts another order in. And so all the factory workers are having to work a little bit harder to make now two orders come through. Now there's a time lag between an order coming through and the factory producing whatever it is that wants to be produced. But before the factory workers have a chance, the impatient boss has already put in another order again. And so it's just increasing the amount of pressure on all these mental factors that are trying to produce what you've asked for, but you're just not giving it time. What happens in the end? The factory just seizes up. The factory workers down tools. They go and see their union representative called self-pity. And there is no room, there is no chance for anything to happen because we're trying to correct all the time, correct all the time, correct all the time. What you have to do is get out of the way. You put your first volition in. Okay, we're going to sit down. I know my purpose. I know my direction. I know what my focus is. And my focus also includes that which it is not. So I don't mind if the mind gets taken away. Why? Because I enjoy life. I enjoy being, I love the whole of my mind, not just bits of it. I'm at peace with myself. Let's see what happens. Now here I want to bring in another concept. Clear comprehension. On open day, I met a very nice woman who is the wife of a meditator. We had a discussion about lucid dreaming, which is where you wake up inside a dream. You're still dreaming, but you know you're dreaming, so you can like do stuff like fly. You know. Other people might find more useful things to do with that, but I would just want to fly about. Anyway, she's quite good at it. I'm not very good at it. So I was like, oh, so, you know, what? How do you do it? What are the things that trigger the awareness that you're dreaming in the dream? Because you know what normally happens, things happen and you just don't know that you're dreaming. And she said, well, an anomaly, like for instance, a loved one who's passed on. If a loved one's passed on, then I shouldn't be talking to them. So that anomaly then triggers me to recognize that I'm dreaming. Oh. And then I thought about a dream I'd had earlier in the week in which I was walking down a high street and a dolphin passed me in the street. And I said, oh, hello, dolphin. And he said, oh, hi, Paul. And it didn't occur to me in the dream that that was an anomaly. It was quite normal. Oh, hello, Mr. Dolphin, you know. And so when I thought about it later, I thought, well, why didn't I see that as an anomaly in the dream? Well, there was no clear comprehension. There was no clear, so clearly this person had worked at priming herself to recognize an anomaly. So when an anomaly happened, it was like, oh, this must be a dream. Whereas me seeing a dolphin walking down the street, it's just like, well, that's normal. There was no clear comprehension. And I think what happens when we are in meditation, we lose sight, we lose clear comprehension of our purpose. We lose clear comprehension of our direction and our focus. And we find ourselves thinking out these anomalous thoughts, which are nothing to do with the focus of our attention, where we had wanted our focus to be. And when we become aware of that, we then misperceive what's happening. And the overachiever, the try-hard, that's when they clamp down and they put in a new volition to try to make things right, which only makes things even more wrong. So clear comprehension comes from that clear setting up of the practice, clearly setting up the purpose, the direction, and the focus, and allowing for lapses, letting the mind wander. If you let the mind wander with attention, the mind doesn't wander very far, and you don't tend to lose sight of your focus. So you see the mind going off and you go, oh, it's gone into worry. And worry is painful, so I'll let that slide now and I'll just bring it back to feeling centered, watching the breath, being aware of the body resting in the chair, and just go back to enjoying it. If you enjoy being, if you're happy, there's that sense of contentment, and that sense of contentment is enhanced through not minding that the mind lapses. If you don't mind that the mind lapses, you can't really go wrong, can you? So there's this lovely sense of fulfillment and calm that comes from knowing, well, I can't really go wrong, because the worst thing that can happen is I just do those hindrances again. And each time I see the hindrance, I'm not going to put in a new volition. It's all part of the process. That's what allows you to rest in that middleness. You're neither slack, nor are you too taut. You're just beautifully in the middle, because you're not trying too hard. You're not getting in the way of the process. You're allowing the process to include the lapse. And including the lapse, you're able to bring it back again and again. There's one final concept that I want to put across to you with regard to this. In the books, it's called clear comprehension of non-delusion. I saw on Facebook, and I reposted it because I thought it was so beautiful, it's that the latest picture that they've been able to create of a human cell, single human cell. And it was incredibly beautiful, very mysterious, and totally non-self. And what struck me about it was that within the cell, you had all these little, it was like a factory, again, it was like you had all these little parts of the cell that perform function in the overall functioning of the cell. And I thought, well, that's amazing, because that cell divides, and then there are two cells, and then they divide, and there are more cells, and they replicate themselves, and they develop, and they grow. And they grow into your spleen, into your kidneys, into your heart, and your lungs, and your brain, and all this sort of stuff. And it was quite clear that it's all a self-organizing system. It organizes itself. You don't organize your kidneys. When was the last time you thought about your kidneys? And they've been working patiently all that time. Self-organizing system. The human body is a self-organizing system. The mind is a self-organizing system too. You've got the factory of the mind. Everyone knows their jobs. Faith knows its job. Energy knows its job. One-pointedness of mind knows its job. Decision knows its job. Desire to do knows its job. Even craving knows its job. The whole mind knows its job. Volition knows its job. If we just relax and let the self-organizing system of the mind do its job without getting in there and putting a banner in the works, everything goes beautifully. That's clear comprehension and non-delusion. Clear comprehension and non-delusion is to say that it all works by itself. Your task as a meditator is to set up the right conditions. Having set up the right conditions, your job is then to relax and enjoy the ride. Mind and body will do the rest. That's what you learn as you become more experienced in meditation. You learn what not to do. You learn not to interfere. What does it matter if the mind's just gone off on a little jaunt, off on a little fantasy, off on a little daydream? It's fine. It's all part of the rich mystery of existence. Why are we dividing the mind off into good and bad, right and wrong, should and shouldn't? What about a holistic approach to meditation, where you sit, you set things up properly, and then you wait, you relax, you're content. And if you wait and you relax and you're content, and there's a volition which says, if you notice that there's something transient, will you let me know? The mind will let you know. Once it detects that there's something transient, it'll just happen. You'll just go, oh, it's transient. You haven't tried. It's not that when you meditate, you're not making things transient. You don't have to try to make things transient. You just have to not interfere. You just need to be calm, awake, alert, primed in the sense of having set things up. And then you just relax. Things are transient. You don't make them transient. Being transient, they are ungraspable. The mind that recognizes the ungraspability of life is content. It's not anxious. It's not trying to force things. It's just relaxed in the moment. And you'll also detect that sounds occur by themselves. You don't make them occur. They just occur. Thoughts just occur. Feelings just occur. Sensations just occur. The whole of conscious experience is self-organizing. It all happens by itself. There is no need for the over-effort. It's counterproductive. All it's doing is creating a barrier which stops you from seeing what's actually going on. And that's where the path is leading us. It's leading us into more and more apprehension and clear comprehension of the truth that everything is unfolding naturally as it should. And it doesn't need the interference that the untutored mind keeps getting in and trying to change things and alter things, and make things different. That only creates suffering. And so the further you go into it, the more and more clear that becomes. Sona did become enlightened. He did finish the training. When he had discovered where that lovely balance is, and it's so delightfully within yourself. I mean, at this moment, you're listening, right? It's all happening. It's all just unfolding. You're not having to do it. You're not having to try to be here. It's just unfolding. And the more just you relax and you're open and you're just peaceful, peacefully accepting what's unfolding, then the more and more of this information is seen and understood directly.